AIDS in Poverty Reduction Strategies. She holds a PhD in Population Economics from Harvard and now teaches on population issues at Johns Hopkins. In the World Bank, she worked and wrote on health and especially AIDS issues.
Chance to talk a little bit about the World Bank and careers in international health, and want to thank my colleague Hazel Dent. There are more seats up here for those who are on the floor in the back. Please don't hesitate to come up, and if you get bored, don't hesitate to leave. I do have some handouts. I have 50 copies of Transparencies. Watch out, it is PowerPoint. Plus a couple of little brochures about employment in the World Bank. Now let's see if I can make it go to the next one. Left is right. Okay, you have to learn, thanks. It's coming. Maybe. Here we are. Okay. I'll say a few things about the bank's role, about health work in the bank, and then we'll talk about recruitment opportunities and maybe some things about the realities as well. On the bank's role, thank you, Samir, the bank is the largest development finance institution around the world, as many of you know, and works through an incredible variety of instruments, which we won't get into this morning. More importantly, the bank is also a global partner in a variety of different areas, focusing more and more on global public goods as well as working at the country level. Finally, the bank is a knowledge bank as an institution. Yeah, here we go. It's just a little slow. Okay. Thematic focus of the bank's work, you can see that the bank works here across all areas of development. I've tried to highlight health, nutrition, and population a little bit down here in the bottom, but you see it's also a relatively small share of the bank's work. It's about 7% of lending. I won't bother to go into the other areas, obviously. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about health work in the bank, what it consists of. A lot of analytic work. Sector studies at the level of individual countries, global policy research, operations, loans and credits and grants to developing countries around the world, roughly $1 billion a year in new commitments. Policy dialogue and country strategy are really critical. That's where it all starts. Country strategy at the level of the bank's overall country strategy and the contributions of health to a broader dialogue between the country and the bank. It's not only about a single health project. It's about the contributions that health activities might make to broader development and vice versa. Trying to get into work with colleagues who work on macroeconomic issues, who may be working in the transport sector, about what they can do for better health outcomes. Very important distinction next, arm's length, not hands-on. All of the other speakers spoke very much in hands-on terms. The World Bank is not a hands-on organization. It works in an arm's length relationship with its clients. It makes money available, it does not make people available. Very important distinction. Consultants financed by the World Bank are not consultants to the World Bank, they are consultants to the World Bank's clients. And the World Bank may work with a client on the selection, but the responsibility of the consultant is to the client, not to the bank. A few comments about organizational culture. All of the things that the previous speakers spoke about, trust and the like, cultural sensitivity, They are critical. This is a multicultural institution. But the fact that the bank is an arm's length institution, works in a different way with its clients, is really critical. The institution also demands an enormous amount of its staff. Practically everyone tends to be driven. People work routinely 50, 60 hours a week, more when they are on mission. They tend also to be very competitive, competitive with themselves, competitive with each other. So I would say, frankly, it is not a particularly hospitable work environment. It's a very difficult and demanding work environment. And many people who are hired from the outside into the World Bank, particularly into senior positions, fail, and fail miserably. And they tend just to leave. Over 50% of senior management appointees from the outside leave within 2 years. One, you probably know about a fairly distinguished one who left recently.
Oh, yeah.
He was not alone. This year we had an update of the World Bank's health strategy. I'd encourage you to look at it. It's available on the web. You can get it in the World Bank's bookstore. Just a few points. Particular emphasis on health systems, more and more emphasis on cross-cultural variables, and swaps. Raise your hand if you know what a swap is. That may be a good thing, but for those of you who want to get into health work at a policy level, it helps to learn about a swap. I hate the term, but it's around. Sector-wide approach. It's about a modality of cooperation with clients. Now, I'm going to go very rapidly through various aspects of World Bank recruitment. The main thing being direct opportunities, direct hire, much more. This is experienced professionals. This is second or third career. People tend to be over 40 when they are hired. Consulting opportunities, there are lots of them. The most important thing to say about World Bank Finance Consultancy, however, is the consultants are consultants to the clients, not to the bank. 85% of World Bank Finance Consultancy is consultants to the clients, not to the bank. There are all sorts of specialized opportunities. I won't get into that. And then down at the bottom, three different kinds of opportunities down here. The Young Professionals Program, I'll say a little more about that. Junior Professional Associates, and then the bank internship. Internships, here's a little more detail. The most important comment I would make about internships, to be brutal about it, in many organizations, internships are there as an opportunity for people to learn about the organization. I don't see World Bank internships in that way. I see them as a way to get the World Bank's work done. And if you're not going to make a contribution to getting the work done, you won't be hired as an intern or anyone else. Junior Professional Associates, a relatively new program where people come in, usually with master's degrees, for 2 years, and then they're required to leave. That's a very important dimension. Now, interestingly enough, some of them may come back after 5 years. That's the condition of the whole program. There have been too many young people who come into the World Bank in this kind of an environment, and they expected to get into a career track. That's one reason why the bank created it, with a requirement that you leave. And finally, the Young Professionals Program, incredibly demanding program to get into. It's a wonderful career opportunity with people with a variety of different backgrounds. The Young Professionals, it's 2 years of structured training on the job with all sorts of support structures around it. Now let's see if we got a blank here. Young Professionals recruitment this year, it's a little intimidating with over 13,000 applicants, and you see the way they get filtered. And it comes down to pretty few at the end. 22 out of 13,000. That being said, there are some people in the health field who come into the World Bank through the Young Professionals Program. Virtually all of them have PhDs, and they're really good. So don't exclude anything. Now, I'd like Hazel, if she would, to say, what does this all mean then? What's your advice?
Thanks, Ed. I'm going to go through this advice column, but I'm going to put in one footnote about the World Bank to follow on the details Ed has been giving you. What's your nationality? We know that the president of the World Bank is an American. But what about the staff? We are in the World Bank, 75% are not American. Now, if you are born somewhere other than the U.S., but you carry a U.S. passport, as I do, and I was not born here, you join as a U.S. citizen. It's very important to note that distinction. So if you have a non-U.S. nationality, truly, that's probably going to help you. Now, let me follow up on this last slide, and I will be summarizing both from the World Bank perspective and what our other speakers have been saying, because the lessons are all very similar. Three things. Think about what work do you want to be doing now, in 5 years' time, and 10 years' time. Do you visualize yourself as in like policy, out in the field, perhaps in a lab? Think about what you visualize for yourself. Have a very serious discussion. Now, people have often been told when they're starting out, you need more experience. How do you get more experience? That's what you've been hearing from all the speakers. Use any avenue you can. There are NGOs that are a particularly good avenue. Use consultancies. Use internships. Use the Peace Corps. But get your foot in the door. Remember what we all know, that Chinese proverb, a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single footstep. Your career starts with that first open door. Second thing, do your homework, please. Use the resources of the organization. The bank has a vast array of materials, as you've probably picked up. For example, go online and the opening page will give you material on climate change, corruption, broadband access in Africa, education in Asia. It's huge, but you need to get familiar. You need to know what you're talking about. And there are over 100 different types of documents available from the World Bank. Now, where do you start? Well, just start browsing. But in particular, look at working papers, staff working papers, because that's where work is ongoing. So my second piece of advice is do your homework. Thirdly, you need to find a hook. Find your niche. Decide what is the area you're going to use. And use that hook to find someone with your interests. Find an area where you've done some work. Don't just say, I'm interested in health. I'm interested in child nutrition issues in rural areas. Find some way to link up with someone and then go network. And that's what these pieces of advice are meant to tell you. But I think the bottom line we've heard all morning at this session is that global health is such an important field, hugely important. You can make a contribution. You can make a difference. But it's going to make a difference to you. So, go for it.
Great. I think I warned you at the beginning that we will not be able to give you a magic prescription. But we're highlighting the way through, and the repeated advice is persistence and determining your goal. We have about 12 minutes for quick questions and answers. So those who would like to do that will just line here, because there is no microphone in the middle and the rest will not hear you. So just please come here. And while doing so, let me ask you, how many of you are members of the International Health Section? Raise your hands. Well, the rest has no opportunity. We will give you the networking with your colleagues, your employers. We have a special committee on what we call emerging health professionals. It used to be student and young health professionals, where we will try to give you a forum for networking. But working with the section, if you are in another section and sticking there, there is always the secondary membership. You will have access to our newsletter. You will have the access to our program. We give an annual award for the best student paper, among other things. So consider that, because this is the home for those who would like to go international. Now, questions, please come here. I'd like you to get to the microphone.
I think Dr. Beto and Dr. Steele both mentioned hired in the country that they will be working in. Would you advise that we actually move somewhere to get that? Or were you saying you can hire people in the United States and send them there? Or, okay. Because I actually have dual citizenship, and I was wondering if it would help me to apply from there rather than from here.
Well, okay.
Generally, I would recommend that you be hired as an American here in the United States. The major bulk of the hiring that you do here, if you are interested in the kind of benefits that I talked about, would have to be a recruitment from Washington. And if you are recruited from overseas as an American, you do not get housing. You do not get education. You are hired as a local employee here. So I would not care.
Just let me add to this that one way for those who were who are foreign-born, that you may have a better opportunity when you visit back home, or you have an uncle who is a friend of the Minister of Health, and he will recommend you to one of the local offices. These are the contracts of local hire, so they will love you because they will pay you less, but you have an international American qualification. Well, I did that at least with 20 of my students, so it's a way to do it.
Thank you for a wonderful panel, by the way. My question is really directed to the Peace Corps. I've heard now from PAHO, USAID, and CDC yesterday about the tremendous turnover and the need for people trained in the health arena. And I'm just wondering, speaking from an accredited School of Public Health, whether there's an intent to open up new schools of public health to become part of the Masters International program. Great question. Let me just describe in a second what the Masters International program is. Students apply to the master's degree in public health. When they're three quarters through their master's training, they go in the Peace Corps for 2 years. They come back and finish. And we do have several in public health. We will have a RFP, or we're calling it something more low-key than that, coming out the end of January. If you are a school of public health and you would like to become a Masters International partner with us, watch our website, and apply in January. We need more schools of public health involved in our Masters International program.
I'm Tom Hall, University of California, San Francisco, also with the Executive Director of the Global Health Education Consortium. I just wanted to mention there are at least three recent books, two American, one British, that go into great detail about looking for jobs and actually listing of jobs by country, by type of job. One of them is about 600 pages, OmniMed, partially online, will be searchable online, and they're developing that component of it. So you have a lot of resources there where they've done a lot of looking around for possible jobs. I know of a number of things on the internet that are specifically listing various job opportunities, field placement opportunities, including the organization I direct, Global Health Education Consortium. So check those out. Lots of sources.
Thank you.
I think the best job is the job that doesn't exist. And I say that quite consciously. When you enter into dialogue with people in different institutions that do work that excites you, you may find over time they didn't have a job. But they then get interested in you, and they create a job for you. I never personally applied for a job, to be quite honest. Jobs just came my way because I was interested in people and people were interested in me. And they created jobs around me. That's the best kind of job for you, and I'm sure you can get it if you have the right kind of network and the right kind of dialogue with people.
Let me just add to that. This is one of the strategies that I use with my advisees. Send the person for a practicum, or if an international, to do his thesis or her dissertation. And I advise the student, pick up the problem which is giving the Ministry of Health the most headache. Work on it. You will be the expert. You'll get the job. So this is one way to do it, whether within the United States in Tampa, Florida, or overseas. But I normally send my master's and PhD students back home for students coming from overseas. For the domestic, yes, work in a program on a dissertation that is causing headache to the local health department, and they will hire you once you finish.
My question is definitely, can you tell us more about the World Bank policy facing the health sector? Who decides where the funding goes and which country gets it?
In 30 seconds, that's a tough one. Who decides and how? What the World Bank finances in the field of health is a product of a very complicated dialogue between the country authorities and the World Bank staff. It all starts with a definition of a country strategy, and this strategy is defined largely between the macroeconomic authorities, ministries of finance and planning, and the World Bank staff. Increasingly, however, these strategies are subject to dialogue with the sectoral departments, more and more also with the civil society and the NGOs. So it's quite an emerging and evolving kind of instrument. Country strategies are reviewed by the World Bank's Board of Directors. They set a general framework for the World Bank's program in the next 2 or 3 years in the country. From there, the bank's sectoral staff enter into dialogue with both the main macro agencies as well as the sectoral departments. Sector studies, input. The actual amount lent will vary according to the nature of the project and the country program. There's no single simple point of decision. I'll gladly talk further about it afterwards if you want. Thank you.
I have a quick question for those of you who are still here. How many of you are returned Peace Corps volunteers?
speaking as a returned volunteer myself, I can say, second everything that she said. And for those of you who aren't, returned volunteers are great resources, and you can learn a lot from talking to them and me. I had a quick question. A lot of the people out there I know at the conference have MPHs or MPH students. And I'm curious about those of us who are interested in PhD doctoral research, which is more research-based, not just practice-based, especially for PAHO and USAID. What do you see in terms of community-based opportunities for those of us who are interested in pursuing our education further than just an MPH?
Great question. One of the issues is it really depends on what your research is. If it's more community-based, I think you're going to have a lot more opportunities than if it's not as community-based. But eventually, the issue of policy strategy setting and the issues of governance in terms of even organizations and NGOs, I think definitely a PhD will carry, I think, more weight in people's minds when that comes. But it's an emerging field. But like any research, this is growing so fast, as you're aware. But I think it's definitely a good investment.
There are two aspects to that very intelligent question. One is, if you would like or are aiming at an academic career or a research career, then you can go. But it is advisable for a practitioner to put some hands in the dirt and work after the master's degree before you pursue the PhD. But definitely the PhD, there is a lot of money put into research globally. And that, if you review, for example, the Global Forum for Research, you will find that there is a lot of funding for research issues. So research is not, PhD is not only for academia now, but also for doing research. Any questions? Yeah, this is Ray Martin, the past chair of the international section, who developed an excellent page of links for the most available jobs he will talk about.
Yeah, just 1 minute. This two-page thing is probably, I think, one of the better sources of information on jobs and internships in international health. Information about some of the richest directories, websites, and so forth. Tom Hall, who's here, is part of this effort. And I have some hard copies, probably not enough. A lot of you asked for it, but they'll be at the International Health Section booth. Actually, the easiest way to work with it is to go to the website cciH.org, and on the home page, there's a link to what's called Job Search Resources. And on that, on the internet version, there are links to all over hundreds of organizations and directories and so forth, their job pages. So if you're looking for who's hiring, it's a very easy way to find out what some of the possibilities are. But I'll have a few copies in the back.